Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius, episode 19. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you'd like to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius with capital G. Leave a comment or a question for the show and become part of the conversation. My name is Luke Vincent and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David. How are you doing today, Grant? Did you have a good New Year's and that?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, very nice, very chilled. That's all I really want now.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think I had like a couple of drinks over Christmas at one point. I just felt awful.
Yeah, that was mad.
Yeah. Not like it used to be. I sent it to Simon when we were trying to do the little test record. I was just sitting here. As soon as you mentioned tea, I was just like, I've got to have a cup of tea now. That's it. It's just making me want tea. And that's it. Going to be sitting here quite comfortable. You know, that's all I want. Got my slippers on. Normally we do have a second host as well, but Simon is not only having technical difficulties, I mean, we barely managed to get this call connected. He's also getting very close to his bedtime, so he's not able to join us, unfortunately. He's needed elsewhere, so that's fair enough.
I think I missed the last one, so I guess it's his turn.
Yeah, that's true. Although, actually, it was funny, actually. I wasn't funny. Laura maybe relive the nightmare, but with all of this fiasco I've had, because I was just looking back over, and this is our first episode of the new year, so Happy New Year, yeah. First of all.
Happy New Year.
Yes. The last episode we did was actually like the back end of November, so we had like the whole month of December where we just haven't had a chance to record, and that's mainly been down to computer problems. Long story short, I was without a computer for almost a month, and in the end used my right in the care package I've got to just request a new computer because it was just getting beyond a joke. So that was fun. So we're back on track finally. And part of that meant we lost the last episode we did. So the one without you never really made it. It's kind of like episode 19 and a half, I suppose.
19. Then we'll get episode 19, the lost episode.
Yeah, exactly. The one that was never meant to be. But enough about 2017. Have you been up to anything fun in Magic recently?
Well, I suppose since November, we've had Unstable.
Yep.
Obviously, we've had spoilers for these. We've had a few, PPTQs and stuff in time. I haven't been to any PPTQs, although I might have done if I was able to go to the one that's just gone. But they were kind of like, between big seasons anyway, I suppose. But Unstable, I've done a couple of drafts of those, which is good. I bought a box of Unstable to draft myself because I decided to build a cube. And originally I was just going to they're not worth much money at all. I'll buy them individually. But because I like the basic lands and the foil tokens so much, I thought I'd just get a box. It'd be easier. So I've got a sealed box at the moment that I need to find at least four people, ideally six or eight people, and to basically help me open booster packs while drafting.
Yeah.
But yeah, apart from that, I think I played... What was it? One Saturday Showdown, I think. Maybe two. A bit of standard. Actually, no. Saturday Showdown. I did a game day in Eastbourne to win that very nice treasure map, play map.
Oh, yeah.
It was when I bought my box on Stable, though, I got a fire box thing. And Treasure just had the alternate Search Raz Counter in it. The one that has the basically part of the map on the back of it. I don't know if you've seen those.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the if you get one of the foil versions of those flip cards from Ixalan in the treasure chest thing. They have some artwork on the back, which is like basically a sample of that playmat.
Awesome.
So I've got that one. So although I didn't get the playmat, and it's probably the nicest playmat I've seen since I've been playing at a club, so it's like 5 years worth of playmats, I suppose.
Yeah.
I got the one on the card, so I'm pleased with that. Yeah. Unfortunately, it was a bit of an awkward time, because you had like Christmas and New Year, and Eastbourne did their one like just after Boxing Day.
Yep.
And the following weekend was like New Year's, and some did that, then I had New Year's plans, so well done for those that managed to go to a game, even though it was quite a, awkward time.
Yeah, definitely. I always find it very difficult to, around this time, just seeing so much family, really, it's just difficult. So yeah, Magic always kind of drops off for me naturally anyway. Yeah, it hasn't been helped by a lack of computer. I haven't even been able to get, when I've had a bit of time to myself, haven't even been able to play Magic online. I've had to just... I know, starting to, get the shakes, need a bit of a fix.
Yeah. Have you got your invite for Arenas yet?
No, because I forgot to sign up for it.
I did sign up for it, but got my people, you know, that might be saying the same actually. I got the non-disclosure agreement. I said, oh yeah, we'll send you in a couple of weeks. And that was, well, before Christmas, like a week before Christmas, I think. Maybe a bit longer than that. So I'm waiting for the open beta download, to be honest. But other than that, I should be playing it soon, I think.
Yeah, awesome. So, speak to Simon about that when you can, because I think he was saying he wanted to speak about Arena. So I wasn't sure if that meant he'd got it or he was...
He might have done. I think the invites are going out.
Yeah, no, I missed the boat on that, foolishly. But yeah, no, that'll be awesome to, obviously not on the on the podcast, but at some point in the future when, you know, it goes past the non-disclosure agreements, you know, time, then it'd be good to hear more about it and see more about it when they start releasing more. Okay, as for myself, the only real magic stuff I've done in recent memory is I did manage to get a draft done online. I did a triple Ixalan draft just to try and get the last one that I could. It's quite funny. First couple of picks were basically one with the wind, and then I managed to somehow wheel something stupid like 3 or 4 River Herald's boons. Yeah, and just strictly just to see if it was a good idea, and just for a bit of a laugh, I ended up playing like all 5 copies that I managed to draft of River Herald's boon.
I've only done that once in a draft. It was that terrible from Zendikar. It was the green and one land you control becomes a 4/4 to end of turn, and they have to block it.
Oh yeah,
I dropped 5 of those once, which had varying results because it's quite good because turn 2 you could like kill one of their creatures on purpose with the land or whatever. But it, just having 5 of them was just funny, even though it didn't go very well most of the time.
It's great because I think it's always fun when people see you play. They go, okay, you got the second one. That's pretty good. And then when you play copies, you know, 3 to 5, they're just like, what the hell? So, yeah, no, it was good. It was quite nice drafting Ixalan again. It's both great and not great. I mean, there were silly games like where you get the one with the wind on a Jade Guardian and they can't kill it. And you just go, yeah, that's great. And then you get the other games where your opponent does it back to you, but with the Mark of the Vampire. And you're like, yep, cool. This format's great. But then you get the other games that are actually quite fun and interactive. But yeah, I've got high hopes for the new set, and we'll hopefully see what that brings. Which I suppose is a good segue, really, into some of the new cards that have been spoiled, and we've got quite a slew over the last few days, in particular, especially on my Facebook feed that just keep popping up.
Yeah,
there have been some pretty interesting ones, and I want to talk about a couple. I mean, there's loads on there. We'll link spoiler below in the show notes, sorry. But there's just a few that I want to sort of speak about first of all. Because obviously you're starting to see the cycles come in. So you've got the primal creatures, so the massive elder creatures, which are pretty good. I think the first one we saw was Galta Primal Hunger. So they're all the big nasty sort of poster child sort of creatures of the set. People are going to love them in sort of EDH. And then you've got a cycle of tutors. But the couple that I wanted to really talk about, there was the first one for me, because I was really interested to see if vampires would actually be a standard playable tribe. And there was the mono white deck that's been floating around using a few vampires. But the most important thing I think people were expecting was a lord, and that's what they've got unprinted in Legion Lieutenant. So it's a 2-mana 2/2, 1 white, 1 black. Vampire Knight, other vampire creatures you control get +1/+1.
Yeah, it's nice.
This could be, I think if vampires are going to be good, this is the sort of card that it needs to sort of, you know, put it up there. And with this and Metallic Mimic as another pseudo lord, you can actually start to, you know, do the thing that you want to be doing with, like, you know, lots of creatures. Pumping them, that sort of stuff. And there was another creature, another vampire as well, which is pretty plain, but the Skymarcher Aspirant. So he's a 1-mana 2/1. He's got Ascend, which is he's got flying if you have 10 permanents or not. So basically, if there is an aggressive vampire deck, he might be part of that plan, just to be able to curve out a little 2/1 there. So not that exciting, but we are seeing potential there. And the 2-mana 1/1 guy, the rare Paladin of Atonement.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, I tried to build a lifehead deck with lots of little guys before, with humans from Innistrad, obviously. And this guy would have fitted in really well with, the Lone Rider, the one on the 4/4.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This guy reminded me a bit of that and the whole life gain thing. I was going to build like a life gain deck just because life gain is quite strong at the moment with the amount of aggro decks are about. Right? Yeah. And this guy just slotted straight in. I don't think I'm going to go vampires for this next set, but I am tempted just because this guy, any kind of life gain stuff, I think is going to be good. And this guy just seemed really like a really cool thing to play around with, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. He's very interesting. For those that might not have read it yet, he's beginning of each upkeep. If you lost life last turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Paladin of Atonement. And then when he dies, you gain life equal to its toughness. So, you know, allows you to be a bit aggressive, not have to worry about blocking, because you obviously want to lose a bit of life to start getting in there. But then you can either block with him or throw him into combat and get some of that life back, which is nice.
Also, it goes well with Famished Paladin, which is the uncommon. It's a 2-mana 3/3, but doesn't untap. But then when you gain life, you do untap him. Obviously, if you've got like a Lord and Staff, you've got like a cheap guy coming in as at least a 3/3, probably bigger. Of course, if you attack with him and then the other one, if the other one dies, of course, then the other guy's going to untap after combat, which is quite cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can just, obviously, just life link in general with tokens, so that's going to work as well. But just nice little, generally stuff that's big that stays tapped is quite bad, but I think if you're building a vampire deck, because even the tokens have life, I think it's quite an all right creature, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's plenty of ways to activate it. One of the things I was going to talk about was the Vampire Blightning, which plays nicely with that. Yes. So play this and untap him and then attack. This is the, one and two black.
Yes.
Discard two cards. If you control a vampire, each opponent loses two life, you gain two life. So there's an obvious pairing there. I think the biggest concern would be mana base.
I think black-white is fine, I think, particularly because the black-black death touch 5/5/2/3.
Oh, Aetherborn Rogue?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Him. Of course, he's a vampire as well.
Yeah.
Which fits in quite nice just because it's a good card already and paramount just seems silly. So I think if you want to put back the deck, you're going to have to allow for double black anyway. Quite a lot. So I think you'd probably be black heavy even if it was evenly black-white.
Yep.
So I think it's okay. You know, the decks I've drafted up, it's sometimes a bit, you know, annoying. But given you've got the fast lands in Concealed Courtyard, which some of the card combos obviously don't have, the better land base for. I think it's okay, really.
Yeah, I suppose it might just need a little bit of care about where you put certain colours on the curve, so not necessarily giving yourself double black and double white at the same points, things like that, just to kind of do what you can. I suppose there's still Aether Harb and... Unknown Shores or whatever, Unknown Territory, I can't remember what that one's called. The good one.
Yeah. Uncharted Territory, yeah.
Uncharted Territory, that's the one. So yeah, there's a few of the vampire highlights, and there's a couple more in there as well, but was there anything in particular that stuck out for you from the spoilers that you see?
The backwards Snapcaster Mage, which I think is weird, but I think would actually see playing some decks, and actually I've got that rainbow-coloured human deck that started breaking through recently, I might put her in that, called Direfleet Daredevil, red and one for 2/1 with first strike, so rather than flash, obviously that's not as good, but when she comes in, you basically the same thing as Snapcaster Mage, but for the opponent. So you exile target instant sorcery for an opponent's graveyard. You can cast that, spend mana as any colour. If it's cast, you put it into exile instead.
Ooh.
So it's a 2-mana 2/1. I know, obviously, no flash. But first strike, and it's human, which is like it's 2-mana 2/1 first strike, I think it's quite relevant. And given that, you know, there's so many decks now, like Burns is quite popular at the moment. Control's obviously a big thing. Death Shadow is obviously still a big thing. If you were, say, playing some sort of mirror or, you know, some other deck where you could be aggressive as well, and you're doing Death Shadow, so you can steal some of their spells and stuff, and that's quite cool. You know, like, play a main phase, team a battle rage on your own creature, you know, do stuff. It's interesting. They're like, I can't remember what's being called, but backwards Snapcaster Mage is what I'm seeing at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. It's definitely one of these cards that I'm really interested to see where this would turn up. Going in the humans deck, putting it in with Vile, because obviously one of the criticisms of this is you've got to in a red deck that might be aggressive, you know, you've got to have the mana for it. I know cards that if you're playing it on curve as an aggressive creature, cards in the past that have allowed you to exile the top card of your library and then spend mana to cast it, have been awkward. If you're playing this on turn two, you're not going to have the mana to cast it. But if you're using Aether Vial, then that kind of gets around this in modern.
Because you could even go, say, if they, you know, cast all your spells, you could, in response, file this in, steal one of their other counter spell theirs. Like, that's just super good. Like, yeah. I'm worried to see it have to fit together. It's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeskai control is becoming more of a thing. And even just as a way of extra disruption against Storm. I mean, this isn't just going to, you know, be game over for Storm. But if they're trying to do something with a card in their grave and you just go, vial this in, that's now gone.
Yeah.
They could be thinking, that could just be like, that takes their turn off if they have, you know, if they're tapped out, or you just get the last thing that they're trying to ritual for or whatever. And then be like, oh, that's just snuff their turn out, which could give you that extra turn you need to win.
I think particularly because so many decks seem to use graveyard at the moment. Dredge obviously does. You know, Burns can have a load of graveyard. Death Shadow, like you said, does have stuff. Control's going to have loads of stuff in the graveyard. Like, I just like the idea of having, you know, this spell, let's say, I don't know, the last burn spell, or maybe like a fireball from a Dredge deck or whatever, and just you having enough in response to finish them off kind of thing. Like, that's just really...
This targeting Conflagrate would be hilarious.
Oh, yeah, Conflagrate, that's
what. Yeah, no, I thought you were just referring to the effect. But yeah, I mean, this on that would be hilarious. If they're, you know.
I think that's how I see the set, to be honest. I looked at it, and there was nothing really stood out of the standard apart from, like, okay, cool, Vampire Lord, that's going to make it more playable. I think it was the fact that I looked at it and thought, there's loads of stuff in the set that's really good for Commander, really good for Modern as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just scrolling through, so we've got back to Snapcaster, we've got the set. That Bloodsun card.
I was waiting for you to bring up Bloodsun. I was like,
the Robin Pub, then you've got Bloodsun. People are already talking about the application of that later, you know, like already, sorry, before it comes out. And that, you know, that's really cool, just as a reference. You know, not going to see standard play, but I'm certainly going to see, like, some utility in Modern, I imagine. Then you've got, like, the really cheap Vampire Merfolk Lords. It's going to, I reckon, really shake up Merfolk decks. Like, there's that that green one that gives another Vampire, another Merfolk Hexproof, which has got Flash.
Yes.
And you can obviously file it in as well. And given that you've got not only Cavern Souls, but also Uncharted Territory, Merfolk decks before, where they were a bit on the fence, like, is it worth having green just because that cheap guy or whatever? Now you've got Merfolk Mistbinder, which is literally just the Lord of Atlantis, but just with green in it. And then you've got this green Hexproof Protecting one, you've got some other Merfolk ones. But is it one about tapping, taking extra turns, or drawing cards? That's it, isn't it? It's the Kumino Tyrant of Oreska. One green and blue, so like already, like, okay, cool, you're definitely pretty with some Merfolk one. So 2/4, tap another untap Merfolk, you've got to block that card. Tap 3 Merfolk, draw a card. Tap 5 Merfolk, draw one card for each Merfolk you control. Like, that's going to see so much one play, and Merfolk is almost definitely not going to be just mono blue now, I reckon, just because of those 3 cards. It's this set is just so full of obvious one cards, I think.
Absolutely. I think the thing you said about Merfolk and the whole green blue that hit the nail on the head there. I'm talking with people that play Merfolk, and it's just, I've always thought that putting green in there has been, like, utterly pointless. That's always been my stance on it. And I know Shy plays Merfolk a lot, and he was saying, oh, I don't really see the need for it. But this I actually think it's worth a second look. Absolutely. Even if you ignored they could have printed that Tyrant card without the tap 5. And I still think that would be
good. Yeah, definitely. I know they've reprinted Silvergill Adept, which is quite nice, because for a while Silvergill Adept was the most expensive Merfolk card in the deck.
Yeah.
So it's good that's got a final reprint. I'm hoping they reprint Scapeshift at some point, because Scapeshift and that card were just those cards from the Lorwyn block, which never got reprinted for no reason.
No.
Just noticed as well, there's another green Merfolk that probably won't see play, but it's an interesting choice. Deep Root Elite. It's green and one for 1/1.
Yeah.
Whenever another Merfolk comes in, you put a 1/1 counter where you like, so either on him or another Merfolk.
Okay. And
that's just a cheap and interesting Merfolk card as well. I quite like that.
That might be more in standard, again, with the...
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. The one that really got my attention I've just seen now, which is in Russian descent, is Slaughter the Strong, double white and one. Each sorcery, each player chooses any number of creatures with total power of 4 or less, then sacrifices the rest. Yeah, so 3 mana.
Yeah.
Obviously not a very reliable Wrath, but if you know the deck's going to be, you know, even in Modern, perhaps, where it's like more mid-range, I suppose, the deck's only going to have maybe one creature that's 4 or around about 4, or a bit better if it's more than 4. You've basically just sacrificed all their creatures and you can keep, like, 2 or 3 guys.
Yeah. It's like the one-sided nature of it. Yeah, okay, that's clever.
And 3 mana, like, three. I know obviously the situation, but three mana wrath is just, I think that's really important, and also like really good for quite an aggressive meta at the moment. Like say if you're playing, you know, red aggro and they've got what, a 3/2 and a 2/1, they keep one creature, like that's really cool, and it's early, which is important, I think, because you've got like Bontu's Last Reckoning, that's quite good, but obviously that's double black and then the next turn all that sort of thing. So yeah, I like this card.
Something you can imagine being played in Commander as well, for the same, exactly the same reasons. Like, you know, you build around it and annoy everyone else when they're doing their silly things.
One that stuck out to me as well, definitely the standards, possibly a sideboard in some modern decks just because of the value, but particularly for like toolbox decks, like anything like, you know, the kind of cheeky cheeky decks or you know, whatever, for a certain card, Thrashing Brontodon. So it's double green and one for a 3/4. Already that's really good value. And then one colourless, which is quite important, as if you played in like band decks and stuff. Sacrifice him, destroy target artifacts or enchantment. Like that's so much more flexible. Obviously not as quick, but as what's that leaning card?
Kazali Prime Mage.
That's it, yeah. It reminded me of that. And in a deck where maybe you're not playing white or you just want a bigger creature, something you could look for, CFC 3 or whatever. I thought he was really quite a strong card for an uncommon.
I think he's great. This is the sort of card you just look at it and go, that's cube material.
Yeah, I really like him. He's a very flexible card, I think. You know, to me, reminds me of, definitely Quasari Prime Mage, but there's another card as well where it's just like...
No, I think he's solid. I was going to mention him for sure. He seems like a very obvious one just to go in the sideboard.
Yeah.
You know.
One thing I think we definitely need to talk about is the, correct me if I'm wrong, the only mechanic is Ascend, isn't it? This is new.
Yes, Ascend, yes.
So obviously that's only going to be for the set. And other than that, it's a bit like, was it the Monarch in Conspiracy, where it's a condition that a player can have, but you're only ever going to see it in this set.
Yep.
It's interesting, because I saw it, and obviously we got the big stuff spoiled first, and then, was it the Black Sacrifice one had Ascend, and all that, that's an interesting mechanic, I guess. But like the White Vampire guy you mentioned, the Sky Marcher Aspirant, the little cheap guys that happened to benefit from it, I think that's what I quite like to take on. When it was just rare, I thought I was a bit gimmicky, you know, whatever, but I like the cheap ones, I think.
Yeah.
Like the Golden Demise, the kind of Drowning Sorrow / Flaming Tenders card. Double black and white, same cost. Everything gets -2/-2. But if you've got City's Blessing, then your opponent's creatures get -2/-2.
It's going to be really good. We've all had those limited games where it goes on a bit and you've easily got 10 permanents.
Yep, yep.
Just almost in your land, you know, you're sitting there, you're drawing all your land and you're thinking, okay, I just need something. So, yeah, exactly as you say, these little cards... That bit of evasion, that one-sided bit, there are little bits tacked on there, just going to swing it for you.
I quite liked Seatron Ceratops, the green-white one.
Oh, yeah.
The first deck I played when I started playing Magic at a shop, so I came into Standard as a format. Yep. I've been playing casually before, but as a format, was when Gatecrash just came out, so I bought the Slayer's Near Event deck. Of course, the thing that was going around then was Voice of Resurgence and also Fixmane Lion, which was like one of my favourite cards ever, just like cheap, you know, little guy that has a really cool ability.
Yeah.
And this Tron Ceratops really reminds me of Fleecemane Lion, just because it's a cheap 2/2,
got
a really cool ability, and just really cool late game stuff at times.
That's cool, Fleecemane Lion as a dinosaur.
I like the way she's popping through the wall as well.
Yeah. I'm sitting next to, funnily enough, you draw my attention to this card now, the 3-mana clone.
Yes, I thought that was really powerful, very powerful. Clones have always been like, four at least, haven't they, this other stuff.
So they basically made it one colourless, one blue, one red. Cheaper, but you need red to cast it. And you only... Basically, it's a 2/2, but if you've got raid, you can have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield. The good thing about it is it's not going to die if it comes in. So if on an empty board, you can just play it as a 2/2.
Yeah, that's nice.
So I think in many ways, it's strictly better clone. No, not strictly better.
It's good. I think it's on par with, I just like how it's one of the first 3-mana clones I can think of. Obviously, you've got the illusion one, where it's 2-mana, but of course it dies when you target.
Yeah.
I think this is the cheapest clone apart from that.
Yeah, which doesn't have a silly drawback. I mean, the disadvantages to this are actually not that bad when you compare it to 4-mana clone. I think this is pretty solid. So there was one other one. Dead Man's Chest. Now, I think...
Yes.
This confuses me, because I kind of... This is a perfect example. Anyone's been playing this game for any length of time, there's going to be cards that you look at and you go, I just want this to be good.
Yeah.
This is a perfect example of that. I mean, just looking at this, and so it's one black, one colourless enchantment aura. So it's not a great start already, because auras don't always tend to be successful, shall we say. enchant creature and opponent controls. So it's already a bit left field. So an enchanted creature dies, exile cards equal to its power from the top of its owner's library. You may cast non-land cards from among them for as long as they remain exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were a mana of any type to cast those spells. Gonti-esque.
Colourless Wealth, that's what I think
of. Yeah, it's kind of... It's definitely, in terms of the card art, more Villainous Wealth than Gonti, for sure. I really want it to be good. If you enchant their creature, and then they go, oh, I don't like that, I'll harness lightning my creature in response, that's still good, because you've killed their creature, and... got rid of their removal spell because they're scared of what you might get off the top of their library. But I suppose it's awkward because the creature does have to die as well. So if it gets bounced or it gets exiled or something else weird happens. Because that's the other thing as well. If you put this on their creature, then you kind of give them the choice. They don't have to block with it. They don't have to attack with it. But that, I suppose, in itself is good. If you basically, it's black pacifism.
The thing I quite like is that it is like Gonti. When it's exiled cards, you can just cast them, doesn't matter what happens to this afterwards. So I think, say, if you have to do it straight away, almost like cost of take, but you know what I mean? Like, you don't necessarily have to have mana up for this, you can just do it, as early as you want, and then just, you have those cards later to the game.
Yep.
So I think that's quite good. I mean, say, two mana, like you said, two mana kind of messes with them. And say, if you put it on, like, a 2/2 or 3/3, that's still, like, 2 or 3 unknown cards. I think it's going to really mess with your opponent's head, so... I just like it just for the nonsense
of it. Oh, yeah. I can just imagine if I ever play with this, people would just ruin my fun. They wouldn't block with it, or they'd kill their creature in response. Just be like, no. I see what you're up to, and I'm not having any of it.
I mean, that's what I like so much about with Villainous Wealth. You know, the top deck at the moment then was Abzan, Sea Drynos, Hornet Queen, all that sort of nonsense flying around. And, you just, hold enough properly on turn 6 or something. Turn 4, and I did it for 10, so still 7 of their cards, and cast all of them. There was a game where they had a really cool board, they had like 2 rhinos, haunting whatever, and I just cast the same one. And of course, he just then had to kill his own creatures, basically. And by the end of it, I was just like, cool, okay, board's empty, and that cost me 1 spell, and you've got almost none of your library left. There was, games where I end up milling them out just because of how many cards I've got, even if I didn't have to kill them with it. And I can just imagine, someone building some nonsense deck where you have this, then pump the opponent's creatures, and it's going to be so. There's so many decks that are going to come out of this, and I dare say I may be one of them.
Oh, it's always worth it for the. What are you doing? Oh, okay, now. Yeah,
I mean, this is 2 mana as well, and that's just really tempting. I'm just like, it's so easy. And, the thing is as well, it's a bit awkward because, of course, like, say in team, you've got quite evasive creatures with, blossom defense, the Hydra, or whatever. But you do get some big creatures in a lot of decks. If you put this on a glory ring, I think that's quite powerful. So, I'm so tempted to do something with this now.
Definitely interesting.
Mastermind's Acquisition looks interesting. All black and 2, search your library for a card, put it in your hand. So, cool, chooses, fine. Uh-huh. Choose a card you own from outside the game and put it in your hand. This is going to be super fun, I think, in casual games for people that are starting in standard. But, of course, for most people, this would be get a card out of the sideboard. And that's interesting. And there's loads of cards obviously that do that historically, and there's an expert around it. But I think it's probably, is it the only black one so far that searches outside the game? Maybe that's a blue thing, isn't it?
I know there's like Burning Wish or something like that.
Yeah, whatever the black one is, but that'll probably be for a creature, isn't it? I remember each of those were quite specific, weren't they?
Yes.
So this is interesting, I think. It's the kind of card that wouldn't surprise me if it starts turning up in Legacy because, they want to be mono black because of, some Legacy nonsense I don't know about. But then, Dark Ritual kind of shenanigans and doing this and messing with sideboards, and there's probably something. And again, that's one of those cards that stood out as me going, that's definitely not a necessarily just standard card at all. That's going to see some sort of inventive nonsense.
Yeah, it does feel scary, a card like that. Like, it does feel like there's definitely something there that could be abused. And I just don't know. I'm with you. I just don't really know enough of the cards in Legacy to actually sit there and think what that might be.
One that I found quite interesting, again, I think it might not see any other format play because it costs 4. If it costs 2 or 3, then you would do Crafty Cutpurse. Now, obviously, it's written from a treasure point of view. So it's a 2/2 flash. When it comes in, the next time an opponent would make tokens, you get those tokens instead. So obviously with treasure map, like that's exactly the way the planet is. But of course you can use it to steal creatures. And again, like I said, I don't think it's going to see playing Wattmills or Legacy because it's too expensive. But of course, even in Standard at the moment, there's so many decks where they make lots of tokens normally simultaneously. We're doing this, you know, say Modern, you know, if you did this against a Lingering Soul, there's no effect that we wouldn't have been able to do that normally before, and that's quite cool.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of that's even remotely close to that is Gather Specimens. It's like a 6-mana instant.
Yeah, again, it's just never, I didn't even know it existed. It came up at a judge conference just because it makes some interesting stuff. But again, this is interesting because, again, seeing token, but the only thing I can think of that's similar was not Hallowed Moonlight. The one that was in, was it Origins? It was 2-mana, next time a creature that would come into play that wasn't cast, you exile it instead, wasn't it? And draw a card.
Yeah, I think that was Hallowed Moonlight, wasn't it?
Maybe. So, yeah, that card. That kind of reminded me of that, and that card, see, I saw a bit in Modern and Legacy Blades, it's sort of like token copy shenanigans and stuff. This reminded me of this one, really, and again, with the amount of token they're keeping around, just stealing like an embalm or eternalized from like a scarab god, or obviously God Pharaoh's Gift. This was a card that struck me out of them going, there's quite a few powerful token things. Let's have like a weird angle that we can take advantage of that. I think that was quite cool.
The more you say these things now, I'm just thinking you got that and the reverse Snapcaster Mage, the tutoring outside. There's all these subtle things that are, and even Blood Sun, which was it all lands lose all abilities except being able to produce mana?
Yeah.
So they're all either something new or different takes on things that we've seen before. It's really quite a lot happening in this set, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to say utility set. It doesn't quite strike me as the right thing, but a set that looks spot. But it just seems to cater really well to other sets. Like, there's so many legendary creatures that are going to go straight into Commander. And then you've got some other cards that are, like, you know, they're okay in Standard. Some of them really aren't going to see any play in Standard at all, like Blood Sun. But then can straight, either ones that can go straight to Modern or ones that are definitely just for Modern and Legacy kind of thing. It's quite an interesting and well-rounded design, I think.
Really clever. Without being disrespectful to anyone who's just picking up the game, a lot of this stuff might be not wasted on them, but might go over their head a little bit because their exposure to the older stuff isn't as much. So yeah, I think when you first look over it, you could kind of maybe miss it.
Yeah.
I mean, even Dusk Charger, a random 4-mana 3/3 horse, reminds me of Nightmare.
yeah, that's what I thought straight away. Oh, one card I want to talk about, not so much for the same reason, but definitely for Standard, was Mysterious End, which is a cross between Silk Rat and Beast Within. Not quite as much flexibility. It would be a bit more flexible if you could put it around creatures. So white and one, enchantment. Basically, you O-ring or Silk Wrap. It's literally a Silk Wrap. A converted mana costs 3 or less creature and opponent controls. But when the enchantment itself leaves play, obviously the creature comes back, and then they get a 3/3 dinosaur. Oh, no, sorry, no. No, so it exiles the creature, and then when the enchantment leaves play, the creature doesn't come back. The dinosaur comes back instead.
That is mysterious.
Yeah, Mysterious End. I read it as they get the creature back, but they also get a dinosaur. As the picture shows, the dinosaur eats the creature, and the creature's dead. But then if you get rid of the enchantment, which to be fair, I don't think there's too many ways of stacking it, unless you do it on purpose. Yeah, they get a 3/3 dinosaur with trample, which I quite like.
Actually, what this is really good against is something like Ramanap Red, where they're not getting rid of that enchantment.
You just want something cheap, you want something, cool, it's got a downside, but because they're so just straight line burn, they're never going to get rid of it or even bother to get rid of it if they could, kind of thing, just because, you just slow it down. It's quite cool.
Yeah, and it's clean answers to Hazoret, you know, numbers 3 to whatever you want them to be, isn't it? Depending on how many cast outs you're running. So it's nice to be able to say, I've got to hold on to this cast out for Hazoret in case I, you know, draw my non-exile. This is really good. No, awesome. My final honorary mention goes to Hornswoggle for best name in the set.
I saw that. You've got Hornswoggle and Swashbuckling. Swashbuckling, everything.
Yeah.
Isn't there not Shenanigans, some other thing? It's got, it's just fantastic, like piracy or navy names. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Sea Legs.
Sea Legs.
Like Sea Legs at the bottom of the blue commons. One blue, flash, enchant creature. If it's a pirate, it gets +0/+2. If it's not a pirate, it gets -2/-0. Perfect, limited nonsense with very good pirate flavour and just very well balanced. Got a picture of a person standing on a boat and a person being sick. Fantastic.
That's brilliant.
I quite like some of the... Was there a counterspell of an upside or something?
Yeah, there was.
Admiral's Order. I really like this. Now, those people hate it because I'll just run counter, what are you going to counter after main phase or whatever. Now, the way I look at this is you run it in a blue deck where you're not control. You run it in a blue deck where you're doing like a bit like Jeskai or whatever, where you're attacking them with a few things, but you need to protect that approach. So what you do is you cast some creatures and you attack with them or foxes, whatever. And in main phase two, you need to drop another bigger thing or you know, a spell or whatever. You just have this, and of course, if they respond, you just have one blue mana to just straight up counter anything they've got as an answer.
Any kind of cost reduction is generally good.
Everyone's treating this like it's a normal counter spell. I don't see it as a counter, I see it as a counter spell. And you run it in a deck that is supposed to be aggressive, where that upside is just always going to, that downside is just always going to happen, kind of thing. It just protects your aggression, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You create a decision point for your opponent, don't you? Because either they shoot your creature before you attack, in which case they're acting out of sequence for them. They don't want to do that. They want to do it at the last minute, like in your attack step or whatever. So if they do this in your main phase, then you go, okay, cool. And that might then mean the way is clear for you to resolve something else.
Indeed, yeah.
Rather than them letting you hit them. And then you've got the ability to play something with this as counter backup, depending on what the mana situation is like. I think it's definitely given me reason to sort of pause for thought, I think, on this. Anything like, it's like, I'm not comparing this to Phyrexian mana, but why is that good? Because it's breaking the fundamental rules of the game, and it's allowing you to do something cheaper. So if something is allowing you to do something cheaper, then it's definitely worth considering. If it doesn't turn out to be good, it doesn't turn out to be good. But I wouldn't write this off just yet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And yeah, I cannot stress enough, I'm not comparing that to Phyrexian mana. Totally not the same. It's cool. Oh, here's a question for you. Final thing. There's two cards been spoiled, but I couldn't decide if this is an infinite combo or not. So we have, you'll probably see where I'm going with this when I discuss the first card. So we have Polyraptor, 8 mana.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for, there's a combo you can do, Famished Paladin with Shadow War, which is tap it, gain 1 life. You can gain infinite life for that.
Which one was that?
So Famish Paladin, 2 mana, 3/3, that doesn't untap, it untaps when you gain life.
That guy.
And there's an aura from like Shadowmoor, which is like 5 mana or 4 mana or something. Put it on a creature, and you can tap the creature to gain 1 life. And of course, if you put it on him, you can untap it, and you can just gain life. Do your one.
No, that's cool. It's a fun thing for Commander and stuff, isn't it? So, right, so the one I was thinking of was the Polyraptor card. So it's 8 mana dinosaur for 5. That is a 5/5. And it has Enrage. Whenever it is dealt damage, create a token that's a copy of Polyraptor.
Yep.
So on the surface, 8 mana, 5/5. You can ping it, make another 5/5. That would then also have Enrage, create a thingy. So then we have Forerunner of the Empire, which is a 4 mana, 1/3 human soldier. When he enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a dinosaur, reveal it, put it on top of your library. Yep. Whenever a dinosaur enters the battlefield under your control, you may have Forerunner of the Empire deal 1 damage to each creature.
Yeah.
Is that an infinite combo?
It depends what you mean by that. Infinite in that you can make as many as you want, not an infinite combo in that you can choose to end it.
Do
you know what I mean by that?
So I can't just break the game. I'm not interested in breaking the game, so like creating a state where it goes on forever. I was just wondering, if he's in play and I cast a Polyraptor, he triggers, Polyraptor takes the damage, and then creates...
Yeah.
Another Polyraptor, who then enters, and then he triggers.
Yeah.
And then you can do that. So obviously, because it says may, I get that obviously you the game will force you to say, no, you can't keep pinging and making infinite dinosaurs. You can't just break the game. That's cool. But that is infinite. That is, I can make as many Polyraptors as I want now at this point.
Sort of. You could make a lot of them.
Okay.
Because each time this happens, you have to mark damage on a Polyraptor. So if you did this 5 times, you'd end up with whatever, like 2^5 is. I can't really work it out. Of course, the earlier Polyraptor would have died. You see what I mean?
Why don't you just go with a new one?
Yeah, you go with a new one.
Each creature. Okay.
You still have to kill the old ones. So you definitely be able to make a lot of them. You can't just go make a million of them because you need to keep track of the game state changing and obviously old Polyraptors dying. I think you'd be able to shortcut it mathematically. So you'd be able to say, like, I'm going to do this 10 times. This means this. 10 of them are going to die. This leaves us with this many. But you'd have to, you know, do like 5 or 10 of them. You would have to do like a million of them because you'd have to show all your markings and stuff.
Fair enough.
So it's infinite enough to be silly. Not infinite enough to break the game, but infinite enough for you to... Or different from the infinite combo enough that you'd have to actually show what you're doing each time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. I like that. That's cute. I mean, it's eight mana, so well done if you get this to happen. But
yeah.
Oh, can we talk about the ridiculous... You've got the five elder dinosaurs with each different colour.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the three colour one? It's a Karma Primal Calamity.
Oh, yeah. He is he quite a new boy, isn't he?
Yeah, silly, silly card. So I thought... Is it Gishark or whatever the 8 mana one is that's the same Maya colours?
Yep.
I thought he was going to be like the king of those colours. But no, apparently this guy is. So
which one?
Definitely Commander. Zakama, I thought, you know, Gishark or whatever the one from the previous set was,
no,
was
I mean,
going to be like the most dinosaur.
Which one of the heads is the king? That's what I'm asking.
Oh!
Got three heads.
No. Zakama, Primal Calamity, 9 mana, Vigilance, Reach, Trample, obviously got 3 colours there. For each thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to play, untap all your lands. 3 mana, including red, do 3 damage something. 3 mana, including green, just throw a title off the channel. 3 mana, including white, gain 3 life.
Sounds pretty nuts.
Yeah, I like it. It's one of those things that, cool, if you get it to go in standard, you've done very well for yourself. Other than that, it's an Commander deck card, and I like that these two sets alone have almost made enough dinosaurs to make an entire Commander deck out of that's actually not like terrible, so that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when we had the rotation last, and I was thinking to myself, now that Emrakul's gone, maybe Aetherworks Marvel should be unbanned. And it's when you see cards like this, you then think, actually, no, I think we're in a good place.
No, we're fine. Yeah. Oh, that'd be funny. I like that.
The thing is, it sounds funny, but all that would happen is it would just eject. You can just imagine the mirror matches now, where it's who gets the Primal Calamity down and then destroys the opponent's Aetherworks Marvel first.
That's really cool.
I can just imagine the internet hating it. I can feel that happening now in another world where it wasn't banned and they're just like,
fantastic.
Silly three-headed dinosaur.
Yeah, like, well, you know, kids and stuff, they like dinosaurs, yeah? Well, we're not getting off playing Magic. Let's get three-headed dinosaur. Then they'll play.
Oh, do you know who I think the real loser is this set, actually, now that I think about it? It's the Pirate Tribe.
It's not Steel Jace. He's a loser.
He is a massive loser. I think one of the cards, he's actually losing his memory again. Yeah.
He's forgotten about the first time. So
but no, I think one of the losers is the Pirate Tribe. Everyone gets a Lord except Direfleet Netbreaker is not really a Lord. The Orc Pirate is kind of like...
Yeah. I mean, you've got whatever the woman's called and you've got Admiral Beckett, whatever. I mean, again, I know they're not Lords, but you've got like the legendary guys, I guess. But yeah, I see what you mean. That is a bit disappointing.
Maybe they'll spoil it and it'll come out. It seems strange. I know it's not a cycle, but it seems like they've given the Merfolk tribe a lord and they've given the Vampire tribe a lord.
Yeah.
It just seems a bit uncharacteristically incomplete, that little cycle type thing. But, yeah. And by an amusing coincidence, I've just seen a card that makes that spoiled that Jace does remember who he is, called Flood of Recollection.
Oh, there you go. So it's the opposite.
Jace is having some sort of flashback. Tumbling down the waterfall deep into his past. So,
for those that haven't been keeping up to date, and I really enjoyed them now, the stories. None of the new ones have come out yet for Rivals, but I've read all the Ixalan ones. Spoilers if you're still copying the Ixalan story. But obviously, Jace ends up in Thailand after fighting Nicol Bolas, loses his memory. There's a really cool episode I definitely recommend you reading, which is him like working out who he is and working out. He can do illusions, and it's a bit like when he tried to cook a fish and he can't start a fire, but then he wants it to be a fire, so he basically imagines an illusion and he tries to cook the fish on it and can't because it's just an illusion and he thinks he's going mad. It's weird to read the story, it's fantastic.
Okay.
And then he tries to leave this island after living there for like a few months. Vraska's ship, because she's been, this pirate, running this pirate ship, she's a proper captain of the ship, and they respect her and stuff. She's been doing that, they find her, she's like, oh my god, Jace, like, I need to kill him, he's, dangerous and stuff, and obviously there's history between them, so they then find out that he's lost his memory, and she kind of takes pity on him, and he joins the crew, and he's, like, helpful, because he can hide the ship, because it's invisible and stuff, and they sort of do stuff together, and, he makes his way as a pirate, and that's cool, and she kind of, gains... like a friendship with him and really like respects him and says like actually he's like a really nice guy and obviously like it was a product of his past because she's got like she used to be like a slave and stuff so she's got loads of past going on as well and she can actually know he's really he's actually like a not a bad guy and it's just like his past that made him do what he needs to do kind of thing and then what's going to happen of course with this run of recollection is he can remember who he is I don't know if he'll remember like the bit he did with Raska, in which case you go, actually, no, you're a friend. But of course, if he goes back to how he was, Raska's going to go like, oh, now he's my enemy, even though they're like almost close to being a couple in some of the stories kind of thing. That's really cool. Definitely recommend reading at least the Jace ones, yeah.
No, that's really good. PM me those. That's the sort of thing I'd like to read on my lunch break, you know, it'd be really nice.
It's like half an hour, 45 minutes to read a story. So, yeah.
Yeah, do it.
For those that also don't know the significance of it, loads of people going mental over Azor the Lawbringer, the Sphinx is probably going to be on, no doubt, some of the booster packs or deck boxes or whatever for the set. The Sphinx is, I can't remember if he appeared last. I want to say on one of the planes Jace was on, doesn't narrow it down much. But you know, on this set, planeswalk away. And on that picture of that card that's like an O-ring from the last set, where it's got Jace trying to planeswalk, he's got that sort of yellow triangle circle symbol above him.
Yep.
Basically, what's been now worked out is the guy that's stopping planeswalkers from leaving this plane is Azor the Lawbringer. It's basically like an Azorius symbol, so I think he is native to Ravnica. Now, whether he's a planeswalker, or whether like Nicol Vale or someone's put him there to look after the plane, I don't know. I assume he would have been a planeswalker if he wasn't. So basically this guy's behind why Braska, Jason, whoever else happens to be here is stuck on this plane.
Oh, right, because he's not a planeswalker in the card.
No, so I don't think he is one, but I think he's been put here maybe from Nicol Bolas, I reckon. But like Angarath, the Minotaur, he doesn't say anything, but I don't think he's been off of this plane, so he's just like a really powerful pirate lord. But Hulatli, or whatever she's called, the dinosaur one.
Yep.
In the story, when you read about her planeswalker spark, she's dreaming about this, this forbidden city of Zeroska, whatever the golden city is called for them. And she sees Kaladesh, which obviously is like a bronze and gold city, and she thinks that's the forbidden city. She thinks she's seen a vision of it. But actually, that planeswalker spark is trying to go to another plane for the first time. But then she hurtles back because of this no planeswalking thing. But then, of course, Raska and Jace know how to planeswalk, but they just know they can't. Well, she just thinks she's seeing visions, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But when, no doubt, I mean, defeat us or negotiate with him or stop him from doing the spell away, which is probably where the Eternal Sun is in the city, which puts whole things about. Then, of course, Jason Brass will be able to get out, and then Huatli and Angarath will be free to planeswalk for the first time. So that's quite cool.
That is really cool.
It's cool.
yeah. I should probably read more about the Fluffering, but I just don't ever think so. Yeah, if you send me the links to the especially the Jace one, to be cool. Although what I'm thinking now, what you're saying about this Jace and Raska thing, I just know somewhere there's going to be someone who's going to be making some pretty seedy fan fiction.
No doubt. I mean, Magic seems to be a bit clean of that, mostly, compared to some other heavy character, fantasy stuff. No, you're right. I think also, just for reference, they seem to have gone into a pack now. So every set, I think they do the 8 or 10 stories released every week, when it comes out. So literally it's just, I don't know, again, this might appeal to some people. I'm really terrible at reading books, but I finished a book the other week, but I've been trying to read it for 6 months, basically, take it on holiday and forget about it, or try and read it my lunch break and then get around to it.
Yeah.
I still read a lot, so I read a lot of articles, read a lot of stuff online, and short stories are perfect for me, because I do miss reading stories, but just books I seem to be, novels I seem to really struggle with. So I really like them, just because you read, again, half an hour, 45 minutes, a new story that's really well written. It's just every week, and then it tells you a bit more about the story. What all the cards do. From what I've said, hopefully I've kind of sold it, that they are really quite interesting and add a lot more to the playing of the card game. So yeah, I recommend them if anyone, again, is like me, kind of struggles with proper reading, as it were.
I very rarely got the time to sit down for very long, so like lunch breaks and things, it's that sort of thing is perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so thinking about what your thoughts on Magic in 2017 were, if there was any kind of highlights for you in the year, whether they're personal ones, like things you did very well in the game, might have been a judging thing, or how R&D have done, or other things that have happened in the Magic world, things that maybe not gone so well, hear any thoughts you have on that. I mean, there's a couple that I've thought about as well, just kind of reflecting as we're at the start of a new year.
It's been an interesting year. I really like sets that have a lot of flavour to them. As I said, I started in Gatecrash, which didn't really have any sort of basis apart from obviously being in Ravnica again, which was quite cool because I've been playing since 8th edition, and Ravnica obviously was one of those sets, and I stopped playing around, I think it was Conflux, had a break, and then came back in Dragon's Maze or Gatecrash. So it was nice to sort of go back to those set that I knew. And then Theros was fantastic, so I really like Greek mythology. you know, favourite four throughout Senkai is all cool. But it was nice to go back. You had like, what, Gothic in Innistrad, maybe a bit of even like Lovecraftian kind of Cthulhu vibe to it as well, which was a really nice touch, I thought.
Yeah.
Kaladesh, you know, it was cool, but again, it was based on anything. Amonkhet, of course, you've got Egyptian vibes. Ixalan, of course, you've got like Mayan stuff. You've got like, if anyone plays Age of Empires 3, that kind of, you know, parts of Europe trying to compete over the new world kind of thing. And you've got like, you know, vampires basically being Spanish conquistadors, and that's just a really cool take on it. And you're like, oh, this is really cool. And just for no reason. Also, yeah, merfolk and dinosaurs. And just like, it's a really cool set, even though it doesn't quite go into like, you know, Amonkhet into Egyptian mythology and Theros into Greek mythology. So I think in terms of the actual sets, I think I've been really cool. The flavours have been really interesting. And I remember, maybe I'm thinking of Khans, I think, where people didn't really care so much about the story, but the gameplay was quite good. I think this has kind of done the opposite in a way. You mentioned R&D. Obviously, this is the only time I've been around where Standard has had any bannings. And not only was it, you know, a banning, it was several of them all in a row.
Yeah.
Which I get the frustration. I get that it's really bad, and the fact that it happened, you know, several times, and they didn't seem to learn from it. And, you know, some were a bit you couldn't really predict, but then some like Felgar and Saheeli Ray was, I think, just very careless. It made it interesting, and it made me stop playing Standard for a bit, which, you know, tech, I suppose, is a bad point, but, you know, maybe go into modern stuff. And I don't really know what people wanted, because I know, obviously, it is just bad. But then, you know, you find some people that, oh, stop banning cards, just let it all go. And, it, you know, if Smuggler's Copter, you know, if works Marvel, Felgar card, he was still in Standard. Can you think about how terrible it would be right now? Like, I didn't even want to think about it. So no. I think they did the right thing, but of course, ultimately, it was a mistake. And I think it's, as I said, it's the first banning I've seen in Standard. And I think hopefully they have learned their lesson. And I know people were saying that, and then there's more bannings, and they're like, oh, no, it's fine, there was another one. But given that there hasn't been any bannings from, what, none from Ixalan, none from Amonkhet, none from Arrow of Devastation, have there?
No, I think it was just.
It was last, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kaladesh Block, yeah.
So that's not too bad, I think, and hopefully they have learned their lesson. So I think design-wise, I really like the flavours, and I think R&D-wise, I think they've learned their lesson. So I think for those that got a bit angry and left Standard, I think if you're going to get back into it, I think that's going to be hopefully okay for a year or so, you know, fingers crossed. Also, we had Unstable, which was fantastic, because I never played Unplayed or Unhinged, and that was just super fun to play. And I think something that I really enjoyed doing in Magic, but I never did when I played casually, was making cubes. And I've made a Conspiracy Cube. I'm almost done with my Conspiracy 2 cube. And Unstable has made me want to try and build an Unstable cube with a few Unhinged and Unglued cards as well.
How does that work with these cubes? Because obviously I know how cube works, but with these Conspiracy cubes and Unstable cubes, are you just making repacks of essentially, like, if you opened a Conspiracy booster, or if you tamper with them to make them specific certain things? How does it work?
I will tamper with them. I've been reading a few articles, and there's a really good one, which if people are interested, I can find a link for it. It's on Energy Goldfish, though, for those that are looking. I think it's just an Unstable cube or Uncubes or whatever. It had a really good advice. And it's talking about, obviously, basically, you can't just repack stuff, because even if you did two boxes worth, you wouldn't have every single card in there. So ideally, you get, I think it's like one of every rare, two of every uncommon, and like four of every, two of every uncommon, and like four of every common kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a pool of cards that is bigger than 360, which, for those that don't know, is the precise number you need for a cube for eight people. So three times, 15 times, times eight.
Yep.
But yes, you have like a pool of cards that's like 500 or 600, which is good, of course, because it means that every time you draft, you're going to get a different selection of cards. But it means that you're not doing a repack, but you are making sure that all the cards that you would be able to open in a box are hypothetically there in the kind of ratios they should be. And that just appeals to me, because again, Unstable, Unhinged, Unglued, Conspiracy to a certain degree as well. Most of the cards are not worth more than about almost $3 or $4, some of them, like the vast majority of them, unless they're legacy playable, just don't have any value at all. Because, of course, I mean, it was a bit weak Conspiracy, but you can play them in Commander and Legacy. But with Unstable and Unglued and Unhinged, you literally can't play any of the cards, apart from Steamrigger Boss, which you wouldn't even play.
No.
But yeah, so the cards themselves are not worth very much. Once you open for drafts, are really fun, but once you play them, you can't do anything with them. And particularly with Conspiracy, I know, once people have finished playing, I was like, if anyone, you know, doesn't want any of the cards, given to me. And I almost got, like, basically three quarters of the cube I needed just from people giving them to me, because I knew they've never played them before. And that's the same with Unstable. I want to make these cards be worth something replayable, because the set is fantastic when you open it, but once you've opened it, apart from the lands, you really can't do anything with it, unfortunately.
No.
So that, along with which most people listen to this, I've probably told you about or mentioned before, was I've got a custom Star Wars cube, a custom Pokemon cube. So someone has spent, not me, but someone has spent some time making their own custom set of Magic cards, so all the same rules and stuff, but with either Pokemon as a base or Star Wars as a base, which again we can link if people want to. But I'm going to print those out, sleeve them all up, and basically you get an entire new set of Magic no one has seen before, using, you know, because I think obviously Magic is the best, you know, strategic card game.
Mm.
They're using this frame, but with new flavours that obviously you'd never be able to do due to copyright laws, so like, you know, Pokemon Star Wars. And they're really cool. They're trying out lots of new different mechanics and combinations that we still haven't seen, even though there's been like 50 sets of them. And that's just really cool. And hats off to the guy that has spent so much time doing it.
Yeah.
It's just super good. And, you know, it's free. You can print them off. I've just been using the printer at work. You know, buying like 1,000 sleeves, sleeve them up, is going to be super cool. And, you know, get those that are local that listen to this, I'll probably be running one in the next couple of months at Dice Fiend. And, well, the cube again is slightly bigger than enough 8 people. So, you know, it's going to be good fun either way for those that, even if you don't like Star Wars or Pokemon, it's still super different, I think.
Every time I've seen you sort of mention it and it's been discussed about a day to do it, whatever, it's just great. I've always wanted to do something like that, but never really found the energy to do it. So if someone's done it, like it's there for you to sort of print out, that's pretty sweet.
I think so I mean, obviously the question you asked was what did I make in 2017. I think overall our standard was interesting, you know, back to interesting, but ultimately I think what I take away from this year is that, and you know, I suppose the year before that and stuff before we should really conspiracy, but just I quite like the passion of being creative with cubes and finding other people's creativity with even just like tokens or whatever, but particularly obviously custom sets that you can just go and have your own fun with. And, you know, this year, like a lot of people, you know, most people are trying to save money and stuff. And I think Magic is a fantastic game that you can obviously sink a lot of money into. But if you're creative, particularly if you start making cubes or whatever, or play Commander, you can play it for free, basically. And it's just so much. Again, if you're willing to sink the time and energy into it, there's just so much you can do with this game. I think it's fantastic for, well, like I said, those sort of sets to be free or sets like Unstable that are basically really cheap, and you know, you could just do so much with it if you don't want to, you know, have to be up to date with standard net decks or, you know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? There's other options out there. There are just so many you can have so much fun with, and that's what I think what I've learned from this year and last year, I think.
I think it's important that sets like the Unsets are staying, if they're staying cheap. I mean, I don't know, so I don't really monitor them. Prices that much of cards, really.
Just doing a quick search now. So, like, Unstable, obviously some of them are going to be popular because of what they're called or, you know, what they do. Like, the Richard Goff PhD is worth my notes from Unhinged or Unglued, whichever one it was, just because, you know, it's a very short game. But looking now, Unstable, 5 cards are worth more than $5.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Garbage Elemental is the most expensive card.
Yeah.
And Everything Magic, Very Cryptic Command, Urza, obviously, and Very Cryptic Command, the other prisons as well. Everything else is so cheap. So again, I was thinking of doing it just singles, but again, I've bought a box which will fill out a lot of it. But again, you could just, with singles, you could buy this as a cube for, what, I don't know, 50 quid or something? Easy. So, yeah, and you could use other things as well.
Especially if you were savvy and your shop was doing a draft or whatever, and you thought, you know, or if they're going to do a draft of it at some point, you can say to people, look, do you want any of the, like, you know, random bulk?
That's what I'm saying with conspiracy. Literally, yeah. I went to as many conspiracy drafts as I wanted to, just because they were super fun and just really quick fight. And just at the end of each one, I was just like, hey, you know, I know we've only played a game or whatever, or if say your friend is easier, but if you're not going to use any of the cards, you might give it to me. And, you know, most of the time, you get all of their commons and uncommons pretty much, and most of them are just like, yeah, this rare is worth like nothing, or I'm not going to use it, here you go, kind of thing. And, you know, Magic players as a community, we can't, you know, we're normally pretty good. And, you know, that kind of generosity made me feel really good in terms of towards the community and towards this kind of, you know, alternative formats kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, Unstable, I'm going to open my box, draft whatever, and then if people are there that want to do the same thing, I'm going to have loads of leftover commons and uncommons, maybe rares, so I don't doubles of. And I know, one guy I've already said, you know, do you want to give me the doubles from your box opening and I'll do the same? And we're just sharing resources to each make our own cubes kind of thing.
Clever.
So, yeah, it's super good. It just makes a lot of, you know, good energy to kind of ways of playing the game, I think, stuff like this.
There's been a lot of negativity, like in the community. There's certain things that happened over the last year, which I'm not going to go into, but lots of like Twitter nonsense and et cetera, et cetera. So it's really nice to hear about and see things like this. And there's plenty more of that, I would say, than there is of like the crap that goes on.
Yeah.
Which is good. One really awesome thing for me, linked in with what sort of getting to there, was some of the Wizards' responses to some of the negative stuff that's been happening.
Yeah.
Whether or not you agree with actions that have been taken by Wizards, i.e. they taking a step and banning people, I do appreciate at the very least that they're showing that the game is not there to harbour people that want to put other people down. They're not going to stand for certain things like harassment or bullying or what have you, and therefore this is happening. I think that's a good message that it can send out, especially parents who might have a child that's thinking, oh, I want to play this game, and they go into a shop and the environment's completely new to them and they're thinking, what the hell is this place? If they can see things like that happening, that's just going to give them confidence to actually let their child sort of loose into these environments. And if that's the benchmark that Wizards are setting out, then I think it sends the right message because it creates the right atmosphere in the stores. It makes it a pleasant environment for everyone. I think that's a good thing. Again, you know, not to bring up loads of crap, but I think that's a positive thing.
I think a good person to talk to this about, I'm sure you won't mind speaking his name, but Luke May is particularly good at talking about this sort of thing. I mean, obviously he's a judge as well, but he's worked at Game Virtual for ages, and obviously that's the same sort of environment where you've got a hobby base where you've got, you know, adults and staff, that you've got kids coming into the shop, and the environment needs to be working and stuff. And Luke's fantastic with customer service kind of stuff, so making sure that, you know, none of the unpleasant stuff that we kind of alluded around was happening again kind of thing, and that just the hobby is, although it's not just for kids kind of thing, that it means that children who want to get involved in the game can do that. It's a suitable environment for that to happen. So for those of you that aren't as local or whatever, that their game store, they might have fun at, but maybe isn't the most welcoming, whether that's to kids or just to anyone. Obviously, you can talk about other groups, like, you know, say it's quite a male-orientated community and not being fantastic for female gamers wanting to get involved. Luke's a fantastic person to talk to for that kind of thing and advice. And there's loads of judge podcasts generally about, you know, helping the community and the overall vibe of the community to make sure that it's as welcoming as possible to new players or any kind of different kind of players. And so that's something to look into if you're one of those people as a judge or whoever that want to improve that kind of thing, because as we saw with the online response, you know, themselves are really trying to make sure that from the top down it's that's not something they're going to tolerate, which is nice.
Absolutely. I remember way back in the day reading an article by someone who went to this game club, and she'd get a lot of like sneers from a lot of the male members and things. And then what it came down to is this one guy just saw it as a bit of a boys club, and you know, somewhere to go get away from his wife. The presence of a woman there was just was just awful for him, and he just couldn't cope with it. And it was just made he would just make this poor woman feel awful for just even being there, and just because she was female. And you just think, how is this sort of happening? And it's good that stuff like this is at the forefront of people's minds to basically kind of avoid environments like that and avoid creating an environment like that where people are feeling excluded. And I'm sure communities aren't perfect, and there will be issues and things, but I like to think that at least in our community it's pretty decent, pretty good going. There isn't much of that, if any of it.
I mean, we're kind of in a good place in demographics that we've been talking about, so, you know, team events or, you know, stuff like other things as well. You know, in Brighton we're pretty good with that kind of thing. But some areas not so good for that, just generally, not even just, you know, magic folks or whatever. So I think we are in a better place. We've got, you know, a really good community and judges helping with that kind of approach, and shops helping with that kind of approach. Obviously, working with all of those groups combined, that's really helped. And I think, again, the situations I've heard of where people are struggling with that kind of thing is because their community is isolated, where you've got a shop in the middle of nowhere that's the only shop that you go to. And if you're saying, you know, again, it's got that, you know, boys club kind of vibe, and there's a female game, you've got no alternative, you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But look, like, someone, got several shops, you've got a shop that's maybe got a bad vibe and people go elsewhere, the shop's going to suffer, and then there's something to be done about it. So it's that isolated situation where I think communities struggle. So again, for those of you in that situation, that's something to look into, or there is things you can do. And if you are struggling, it's probably is because the community is isolated, not because of the community itself, as it were.
Yes. Now that's an interesting point. If you've got that luxury of choice, then it's a lot easier to make the right noises to improve things.
Mm.
That's good. Yeah. I think the other thing this year's kind of made me reflect on, as well as kind of when you alluded to the bannings you mentioned about them. Obviously, it wasn't ideal having the mass bannings that did occur. I'm not against bannings, on paper. It's just I think you used some of the bannings were just a bit clumsy, and I think hopefully, looking ahead to the new year, at least what I'm hopeful of is that lessons have been learned, and we're going to see less of the clumsy kind of interactions where a banning is then needed.
Yes, I agree.
If something is, I don't necessarily think like Smuggler's Copter was a clumsy one. I think that may be clearly a very powerful card, but I can believe that they didn't necessarily think that was going to be as powerful as it was. However,
I think the issue with that was that I think it was people didn't know what vehicles were going to do, and they're actually like, oh, actually vehicles are quite good. So this card that was already quite good is now super good. Now I have to ban it. I think that was probably why. So I agree, isn't it? It wasn't just being careless; it was forgivable.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas some of the other ones, like printing, like the Shahidi Rai Felidar Guardian thing, you just think how that even made it out. It just is beyond me. And you think, I think it's things like that. So, I would like to think that they're just not going to be as careless with it. And I don't think they will, at least not for a while. Unless, of course, you believe the conspiracy, in which case it was a massive PR thing, and in which case, well done them.
Yeah.
It worked. But less of that, please. Moving forward. And the only other thing as well is, on a more shallow side, I day-2'd a GP last year, which was nice. So that was a good thing. Hopefully try and improve on that performance this year, assuming that having a child doesn't take away all of the time that I would spend on magic, which
Simon and Harbit.
Fortunately as well, they haven't, because the people keep asking me, it could be twins, you never know. But yeah, the various appointments and scans and things, they seem very, very confident there's only one. So I would be
good if Simon's not listening. Obviously fine if Simon is listening.
I've got no shame in saying I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
Mental.
That's better than I've certainly done, but then as we know, to be a judge you have to be bad at magic, so comparison.
Oh dear. I've often thought about being a judge actually. But then again, it's one of these things that I just don't know how you do it. I think you've got to have the patience of a saint.
I mean, this is coming from someone that used to be a secondary school teacher, so that's probably perhaps why.
No, fair point. Part of me could do it.
I think basically, unless you're way too much of a spike or whatever, most people that are decent people and have been in the community enough to, know stuff and know people and know how communities work, most people can become a level one judge. It's when you start going to level two stuff, it starts getting a bit more challenging, shall we say. But most people, as long as they care about the community, know the rules and, know how to treat people and stuff, mostly becoming level one is no big deal kind of thing. It's always something that I recommend if you're in a community that no one is a level one judge. It's always worth just having someone like that, because it is doable again for most kinds of people. But yeah, level two is slightly more of a challenge.
That makes sense. It's fair to say, not to speak ill of any one person in particular, but the only bad judging experiences I've ever had have been down to what I've perceived to be a lack of knowledge, as opposed to any kind of not being a good person. Where I've not been convinced that a ruling is right rather than any other thing, which, only here in the day, you can't get it right 100% of the time, not robots. Yeah. And even then, it's never really been like a problem. So that's fair. So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback. Search us up on Facebook, Glimmer of Genius, and leave a comment. Follow the group and keep up to date with whenever we are sending out podcasts. We can also be found on the MTG Cast network. That is mtgcast.com, as well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
See you later.
Take care, mate.
You too, bye.
I think, yes, I'm just looking at the timestamp, about an hour and a half there, so that's easily going to be trimming down a bit of in-betweeny stuff.
We don't need him.
Yeah, we're just fine without him.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell him that as well when I next see him.